you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I've been thinking about all the books and articles and shows that have been done on time management. And I ask myself, is there something important that has somehow been missed? And I've concluded that there is. There is a presupposition that with all these time management tips and advice, that you're going to want to be more efficient with your time. The truth is that many people don't. Many people would rather be more laid back about time. Let it happen. It may even come down from a philosophical worldview, which says, you know, we're insignificant blinks of an eye in the arc of history. We are insignificant dust motes on 7.3 out of the 7.3 billion people on the planet. Doesn't make much difference anyway. Or they may think, my life sucks. You know, why should I rush to get more done? Maybe they don't even have enough to do and they're trying to stretch things out. So it has struck me that it's a bit simplistic to do the typical time management show, article, book, whatever, and just treat the symptom. If only you knew these tips on how to be more efficient, you would do it. That's like treating a headache and saying, well, we'll just give you an aspirin, when it could in fact be just something could be cured with an aspirin, or it could be brain cancer or migraine or whatever. So we're going to try to not be so simplistic here and address first and foundationally the question, the metaphysical question, the spiritual question, the foundational question of, does it matter? And to help me with that Herculean task is my philosopher-in-chief, sidekick, thorn in my side, wife, Napa County superintendent, and all the other brag stuff that I think I'll dispense with for today because I'm mad at her. Dr. Barbara Nemko, welcome to the show.
Good morning. I've been called many things, but philosopher-in-chief has never been one of them.
It's true. I should retract that. I should call you philosopher plebe. How's that?
Probably more accurate.
Okay. So, you know, I gave you this book, which you said you think sucks. And so tell us why you think sucks, because I think it brings out that foundational issue that presupposes, you know, that addresses the prerequisites to whether we should be giving tips or not.
Well, yes to both of those things. This is a very small little book, which I think is why you chose it for me. So it doesn't look at all formidable. But when you open it up and you start to read it...
It's called Time Management, by the way, by Brian Tracy. Go ahead. It's 500th book.
Thank you. From the Brian Tracy Success Library.
Right.
So Brian is standing there on the cover with his arms crossed in front of him, and he looks like your college professor who's quite stern about everything. And he tells you all the reasons that you need to do this. When I started reading the part that says, start with the end in mind, he maps out your life in the following way. Number one, you need to decide, let's say you're a high school student, you need to decide what it is you want for your future. And if you decide that you want to be very successful in business and your adult life, you now have this very clear long-term perspective. So in high school, you need to work very hard to get excellent grades so that you're going to qualify for a good college. And when you get to college, you want to take harder courses and you want to study much longer than anybody else so that you can graduate at the top of your class. And because of those decisions that you've made, all this hard work and studying and extra hours, and of course, going along with that, you've had to put off the kinds of things that most people go to high school and college for, parties, sports, social activities. You're not doing those. Then it's very likely that you're going to get hired for a better job than most of your classmates. And of course, now you've developed these excellent long-term habits, so you're going to work harder and longer than anybody else in the company, and this is how you're going to be successful. Well, when I looked at that, I thought if I was in high school and I read that, I might not get out of bed on Monday morning. How daunting, how almost frightening, and not at all what most of us think of as a well-balanced, well-rounded life he's setting for us.
Well, you're very successful yourself, and while I will leave for another day the question of to what extent work-life balance is overrated, but as a human being who is successful but not driven in that sense, what is your foundational philosophical principle that you live by that enables you to be successful and still you care as much about your grandkids and about laughing and playing as you do about your work, and you do take your work seriously? Talk a little bit about you, Barbara Nemco's foundational principle of time management that enables her to get a lot done and still be, nobody would ever accuse you of being driven crazy, you know, like me.
True. Wow. I guess it's that I'm willing to work longer because I probably don't work as effectively within the confines of the workday. So I'm willing to stretch that out and work 10 hours a day and come in for a couple of hours every weekend to catch up so that I don't have to be so single-minded and focused during the day, because a lot of the things that Brian Tracy dismisses as absolutely worthless are relationship-building things. And those relationships have been enormously important in my life and my success.
Mm-hmm. Walk me through some of that. Flash back to Friday when you were in your office or whatever, typical day. What are the things that you do that Brian Tracy would snub his nose at, and yet have both enabled you to relax? I mean, you're not a kid anymore. You have all the energy you did when you were young. You still look like you're a young woman. You know, so you've been able to stay stress-free and build relationships. What are some examples of some things that you do that he would ridicule that nonetheless have both kept you young and enabled you to build relationships and not burn out and yet still be considered reasonably time-effective, get stuff done?
Well, number one, I think, is I'm not an exercise person, but I do try to eat relatively healthy. Mm-hmm. I try to keep thin because they talk about how if you weigh more, you're more likely to get some of these illnesses.
Sure, of course.
And I try to get enough sleep.
But in terms of the day I'm talking about,
we're talking about the when you get in the morning, you have energy if you've slept enough and you've been eating healthy. I violate the very first rule that any time management book will tell you, because I've read lots of them and lots of articles about it. Never look at your email first in the morning. I always look at my email
too.
First thing.
Absolutely.
In the morning.
Why? Now, that's interesting. Every book tells us not to, and I absolutely do it. And to be honest, it's because it's fun, it's easy, I'm curious, it's like the window to the world. All kinds of potential good things are going to happen, occasionally something bad, but usually, you know, something cool comes from that. That's my reason for doing it. Why do you, and I can do it in my underwear before I have to get dressed for my clients.
I'm not sure we all want to know that.
Yeah, right. So why do you check your email? Because you're not in your underwear in your office of the superintendent of schools in Napa County.
Definitely not.
Why do you look at your email first?
Because that is my connection to all my relationships.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I have relationships with people all over the United States. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to see them in my office and meet them in the hall. So anything that they want to share with me or ask me to do or tell me to do or invite me to do is going to come through my email. Call anymore.
Right.
Everybody just emails.
Sure. And let me put my super rational self on. The reason that all the time management books tell you to not do your email first is because you're freshest in the morning, you should take your most difficult project, and you should work on that first. And then email, which is a little less cognitively demanding, you should wait. It seems to me, from a purely hyper-rational point of view, that the incremental difference in the difficulty level of that work project versus the answering emails intelligently is small, so small as to not justify foregoing the pleasure of, like you said, having the window into your relationships, or what I call the window into the world. And so it's a very silly rule. Do you agree?
Only partly.
Go ahead.
I think the reason is it's so easy to get distracted by your emails and go off and do something that a particular email wants you to do, asks you to do, asks a question, you feel you need to answer it right away, but you can't answer it off the top of your head, so you've got to do a little digging to find the right answer. You do go down a different path than the one you had planned. The same thing with phone calls. Most time management books will tell you, don't answer your calls until you've set aside the block of time in which you're going to do that, and they typically say answer them in the afternoon, because at that point you've spent your best energy time on the most important things, and you can return all the calls when you're at a lower energy place.
I do have a rule that I do follow, which is any email, actually anything, not just an email, and this does very much, is very helpful to me. Anything I can do right away, in other words, an email I can dash off in 30 seconds, or some thing that needs to get done, whether it has to do with work or not. Let's say I remember that my doggy's bowl needs to be refilled. I'll do it right there. Anything that just takes a minute or
that
three.
That comes in an email?
You know what I'm saying? No, I'm saying not just email, but anything.
Okay, fine.
You know, right. Anything that can be done quickly, rather than either put it on my literal to-do list or in my brain, oh, God, I got to remember to do this. Anything that takes like less than 3 minutes, I'll do on the spot, including answering emails as they just come in. And that way, I'm not getting distracted by long projects. So if there's an email that's going to take me an hour that I got to go research, I got to do this and that, I won't do that on the spot. But anything I can do quickly, I get off my plate. What do you think about that?
I do that too, or I fool myself into thinking I'm doing that too. But then I often, because of the volume of emails that come in, the one that I thought I was going to get back to later, I completely forget about.
Okay, let's go off email. We were talking earlier about the fact that you managed to get a lot done, but doing it, working longer hours, but much more relaxedly. You do not suffer from hurry sickness like I do, which is very bad. Of course, it's bad for your health. I'm always rushing, and it's very bad. You don't rush. That's a physiological, biological characteristic of Barbara Nemco. She's a relaxed person. But apart from that, you consciously, as we were talking about your foundational philosophical approach to dealing with work and life, you make a point of not necessarily doing the most important thing. You will stop for chats, relationships. And so I wanted you to tell me some examples of the kinds of not maximally time effective stuff that you do that nonetheless works for you.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, but it is maximally time effective, I have discovered the art of doing the conference call while putting on my makeup still in my house. So I'll be, particularly because we're on the West Coast and a lot of the people that I talk with may be in Chicago or on the East Coast, I will do that while putting on makeup on speakerphone. And that works fabulously.
But what I'm curious about is more like, do you stop during the day? Do you either just walk into somebody's cubicle just to chat? If somebody walks into your office to chat, do you make phone calls that are personal just to build relationships in the middle of the day?
Never.
Do you do that? No, you don't do that.
But having said that, do I walk into colleagues' cubicles during the day? Yes. Because sometimes it's easier just to tell them something than to do an email when they're down the hall. I think it also does help build relationships. You're not some remote person who just sits in her office. And does that occasionally lead to 3 minutes of conversation that may not be solely directed at the purpose I came in for? Yes, that does happen.
You also hear about some great restaurants, I'd imagine.
Yes, or some new winery that I need to try or something.
Have to try, right. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We're trying to take a more intelligent approach. That's a little hubristic. Forget that. We're thinking about the universe of time management books, articles, programs, and finding them that in some ways they are lacking because they make the presumption that people are motivated to be time effective. So we started by talking a little bit about that, and now we're kind of edging into the specifics about what Barbara has been doing and what I'm doing. We will go to the phones a little later, but I'm not ready to do that just yet because there's a lot of content we'd like to get to. You know, you kind of dismissed Brian Tracy's book as being too sober, but lest we completely dismiss it, is there one or two or three core points that are not obvious? That's my core thing, that are not obvious about time management that you'd like to share with me and our listeners.
Well, I don't know that this is entirely not obvious, but I was interested in when he expanded on this. Everybody says you have to make a written plan. We know that. You must write down. If you don't have a to-do list, I don't know how you could survive for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But he says for every minute spent in planning, you save about 10 minutes in execution. And that's an interesting idea. He also talks, he says...
I want to stop there before we get to the second point.
Okay.
I'm not, you know, I think that's a way too broad brush, and I'm not sure it makes quite sense that it's going to be, again, there is more nuance required. Sometimes projects require a lot of planning, and sometimes it just flows. I just wrote this continuing saga. It's a Days of Our Work Lives, and I spent probably, in drips and drabs, 1 minute, 2 minutes planning the whole thing and then going back and starting because I get motivated to start on episode one. And I'm not sure that these notions about you need to write down a daily plan, a weekly plan, a yearly plan, you got a project developed, write the project down in the all baby steps. I think it can be more iterative than that and more individual, both with the project and individual life, depending upon who the person is. What do you think?
Of course that's true. Everything is going to have to be tweaked and tailored to what you're doing. And if you're writing down as an item to achieve that you're going to finish this article that you were writing, you don't need to break that down into baby steps. But if you're talking about a big project, what he's saying is if you write down all the things that have to happen in order to achieve this big project, rather than rush right off into beginning what you think is the first step, you will make way fewer missteps, and therefore you will save a great deal of time and have a greater likelihood of having a good outcome if you've taken a few minutes to think it through. What do I really have to do to make this happen? Who will I need to help me? What part of it will they do? What part of it will I do? Then you start off with a good roadmap, as it were, and you're not taking all these side trails because you screwed up because you forgot something.
Fair point. Okay, what's another point, if any? You can say, no, I don't want to talk about this. But is there another point that Brian Tracy made in the book that is not obvious, but nonetheless potent in helping people regarding time management?
Again, that 20% of the things on your list of things to do are probably 80% of your value to the organization.
Hmm.
And that's why it's important to figure out, you can brainstorm or brain dump your list of the things you have to do, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean you do them in the order in which you dump them. You need to figure out what's really important.
Yeah, that's the usual business about not what's urgent is not necessarily what's important. So let's concretize that. Let's turn to you. And we'll both do it. So right now, think about the fact, what would you say are the 20% either of your activities or goals that add 80% of the value to the Napa County Office of Education? And again, that may even be too narrow. To the children of the country, to the world, whatever. Where do you add the most value? What's that 20%?
Well, right now, for me, it's helping to move our county to going digital, mm-hmm. because we're finding it's so much more effective.
And we all roll our eyes when we hear digital, but there are those apples that were planted in 1983 and gathering dust is not what you're referring to. Paint a vivid, take 30 seconds aside. How does going digital in 2014 in education, how does that transform children's lives and teachers' lives?
It's much more engaging for them than the way we used to learn. If you think about any of us, we all went to high school. How many of us found high school so fascinating that we wouldn't want to change the way it was done? Open your book to page 72, read chapter 7. I used to go home and do my homework while watching As the World Turns because it was so simple to find the question first, go back, find the right place in the chapter, and pretty much regurgitate that, and there was my homework, got an A. Learning, not so much, but always got an A. Today, when you are using digital stuff...
Talk about Footsteps to Brilliance. That's one of the programs you're trying to initiate. You've got a preschool. But paint a vivid picture of what Footsteps to Brilliance would enable a child to do today that is much more transformed and that is worth a technology pain in the butt that makes it worth doing.
Absolutely, and this is something that we happen to be unveiling tomorrow.
I know. That's why I asked about it.
We know that many children today come to school not ready to learn to read. And it's because they have not been read to, it's because their families may not speak English, and we're trying to teach them how to read English. If you don't have words and vocabulary and you haven't been read a lot of stories, then it's much harder for you to learn how to read. And all the research has shown that there is a 30 million word gap between children from the middle class whose families speak English and kids from low-income families whose families do not speak English. That's a lot of words. So if you're trying to learn how to read, which is just decoding talk written down, but you don't understand the talk, then decoding it doesn't help you so much.
Right. So what,
so
is
what Footsteps does is, number one, it capitalizes on children's fascination with cell phones and iPads and tablets. Every parent who has a child, a preschool child, knows their kid wants that iPhone or that iPad because they see us looking at it. It's so important to us, number one. Number two, it's fascinating because kids can make a tablet do things. You tap on the screen and you make things happen. You control it.
More interactive.
So Footsteps, I'm sorry, go on.
I just said it's more interactive than reading a book.
It's totally interactive and very engaging because the book that you read on an iPad may be animated, usually is. It may be musical. It's got all these fun bells and whistles that you don't get in a regular book. And particularly, let's go back to if your parents can't read the book to you because they don't speak or read English. And many of our kids come from families where the parents don't read Spanish either.
Right.
So Footsteps is a library of several libraries of books that will read themselves to the child in English or Spanish, and as the book is reading itself, the word being read is highlighted in the color red. Plus, when the child taps the screen, he can make things happen. So there's a book about a family on a picnic, and when you tap the screen at a certain place, music starts to play and a line of ants walks towards the picnic. Or there's one where somebody's hiding, and hiding under the bed there's a snake, and if you tap the screen, music starts and the snake slithers under the screen. So the child controls that, plus you can read it again and again and again. The average parent, after the fifth time reading the book, is kind of done with that book. The iPad will read it forever.
And the kids love that.
As much as you want it to. So kids will go back and say again, 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 and they get to read it again. For our parents, if they don't read or speak in English or Spanish, of course they speak in Spanish, if they don't read in Spanish, they can listen to the book in Spanish first so that they know what the story is about. Then they can hit English, and it will read in English, so the child hears it in English, but the child and the parent can communicate about the story. There are also games.
I'm going to stop here. I'm going to stop you here because this is off topic. I just wanted to.
So that's why it's very engaging. We are going to give this at no cost to every family with preschool children in California. They can download it on whatever device they have. It's agnostic of what platform they have, Android or iPhone or whatever. And so the children will be coming to school better prepared, ready to read.
And of course, the one thing I have to say is, because I'm sure many of our listeners are repulsed at the idea of putting, you know, children in front of screens and whatever. And again, the answer is, you know, nobody's saying you spend all your day that way. Nobody's saying no social life, but spending some of your reading time individualized, interactively like that, it's pretty unarguable. And yet there is a pretty visceral reaction among some segments of the population, including the intelligentsia, that it's a mistake. Let's turn back. We are listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We're talking time management. A little sidetrack because Barbara's very excited about this, and I believe it's also a real boon, not just for limited English proficient new language learners, but it allows teachers to individualize for everybody from special needs kids to gifted kids. The computer done right, which I know, Barbara, you're working really hard to do, can make a big difference. Let's turn now to away from Brian Tracy's book on time management, mm-hmm. something that you and I have found fun. And dear listeners, I'm well aware that of the possibility of going to the phones, and I'm making the decision that at least at this point, for now, there's much more content that I think would be more valuable for you to hear, and we will go to the phones later. But one of the things that we have found fun...
May I just do one quick plug for Brian?
Sure.
He does say that before you even think about this whole thing, look at the four D's, and that's the part you talked about. Do you want to change? You have to have the desire to change. You have to be decisive, make an absolute decision that you are going to practice good time management. You have to be determined because you're changing habits of a lifetime, and you have to be disciplined. Every time you veer off it, you have to say, whoa, whoa, this is really important to me. So that's got to happen first. If you disagree with those four things, then don't bother.
And I do think that getting you to, you know, dear listeners, if you are questioning that, all that discipline and all that crap, you may not buy my philosophy. And again, I'm a career counselor, so it's not surprising that I value work so much. But I really, you know, I have been a lifetime hypochondriac, as I've said on this show before. And the silver lining in that is it does make you live more consciously. You realize you only have a certain number of heartbeats. And I've thought hard about what's the wisest way to live those heartbeats. And why, and I'll just say this, that being productive, getting stuff done, is ultimately of great value. I mean, I could have fun just watching videos and laughing and having a good time. But every time I make a decision to be time effective, to be productive, I feel like I am justifying my existence on the planet a little more. I'm leaving the world a little better, whether I die today or I die 30 years from now. So if you are finding yourself reluctant to think about time effectiveness, I do invite you to ask yourself, is your life's meaning, are you not going to live the life better led? Are you not going to leave the planet better if you do try to be time effective in whatever way, whether it's nonprofit or for-profit, you know, whether you serve the least among us or those with the greatest potential, we'll leave that aside. But however you define it, if you more consciously decide that maybe the life well led is not just seeking of pleasure, which is so often what people say, well, the job meaning of life is to, you know, try to have fun, try to, you know, enjoy. Maybe not. So now let's turn from that.
Could I give a different perspective on that?
Please do.
Because not everybody is going to be there. The other reason to do it is, A, if you feel that you're not getting the promotions at mm-hmm. work, you're not being mm-hmm. as successful, perhaps mm-hmm. you aren't being as productive as you could be given the number of hours a day, or mm-hmm. two, if you would like to have more time for the other things, all those things you dismiss, to, you know, to be with family and to go bowling or whatever you want to do, if you could more effectively finish your work within the hours, you wouldn't have to put in some of that extra time in order to keep your job.
It's a very good point, and people are always shocked when they're the ones who get laid off, when they are the ones who, you know, it's not random usually. Mm-hmm. They'll come up with some way to make it sound like it's random, but really they're very careful to find a way to keep their really good people. So if your motivation is simply to keep your job,
Or get a promotion.
Certainly being time effective, mm-hmm. It's not the only thing, but it certainly helps.
It's important.
All right. Let's turn now to, we have on other topics, I tend to believe in the quiz. We ridicule the quizzes in Cosmo and in magazines, but it has been said and maybe even proven that quiz question items are among the most carefully read content we ever read because it's concise, it makes you be interactive. And so I very often on the topics related to work, on various topics related to work, I create quizzes. I post them all the time on, you know, U.S. News and AOL. And one of those that I've created that I've not done with you so far is indeed on time management. So I thought I would give you, it's not a test, it's more like a self-rating. And I'm going to give them to you, and I'm going to ask for your honest answer, and we'll use those as triggers for the next part of our conversation about time management, okay?
Okay, ouch. I've looked at the questions.
Yeah, okay. So, again, it's not a quiz, so I was able to, you know, I didn't mind showing them to Barbara in advance. It's more like giving her a chance to reflect on what the truth is. So, first question addresses what we were talking about earlier. It addresses worldview. And I'm going to ask you to score yourself on a 0 to 20 scale. And, dear listeners, I invite you to do it, too. Write down number one, worldview. And then you score yourself on this 20-point scale. I'm going to mention the 0-point answer and a 20-point answer. And you rate yourself from 0 to 20. And in the end, you know, we'll come up with a score that's going to be utterly invalidated or unvalidated, but nonetheless may be useful for you. A 20-point answer regarding worldview is that you realize that time is your most valuable possession and you are careful to use it wisely. And a 0-point answer is you rarely think about time as a valuable possession. Where would you score yourself, Barb?
9.
Okay. Do you want to change that or is that okay?
Because we don't have children at home anymore, I'm not pulled in that direction, so I can put in more hours if I have not been able to do everything I needed to do, so I have the time to be able to use, and I think at work I do use my time pretty wisely for the most part, but at home I allow myself more leisure than certainly you do.
Do you want to change it or are you comfortable with it?
I'm comfortable with
it. Okay, and on this one I must be honest, I'm a 20.
Yep.
I'm obsessed with it, and I like to think, you know, I've written now 7 books, 1,245, I just looked at the stats, 1,245 blog posts, 1,900 tweets, 2,000 other, you know, 1,000 plus more other articles. And I feel for me that's the life well led. Let's
go. Absolutely. And that goes back to the 4 Ds. You have to decide that this is what you want to do. Given your philosophy, you are fulfilling it perfectly.
Yep, and
nobody could be more productive than you are. But most of us are never going to write 7 books and 1,000 articles.
Unless I don't mean to insult all my clients. My clients, I've had 4,400 career counseling clients, and of course, 25 years on this radio show. Those, you know, I like to think if I died this minute, I would not have regretted not going to more family events and not playing more basketball. Although we will be going bowling after the KALW bowling thing at 1 o'clock. Anyway, let's go to number 2.
You probably will only regret the family events you did go to.
Yes, probably right. Number 2, family's overrated. The number of people who say family's most important and they think about how much grief family gives them, but that's a whole other story. Question number two, rate yourself on time consciousness. That's the second item, and dear listeners as well as Barbara. A 20-point answer would be, in and outside of work, you're usually thinking, is this a good use of my time? And a 0-point answer would be, at the end of the day, you're always wondering, where'd the time go? And you note how little you got done. How would you rate yourself, Barbara, on time consciousness?
Maybe 11. I promise you, when I'm watching Downton Abbey tonight, I will not be worrying about whether or not it's a good use of my time.
And are you comfortable with being an 11, or would you like to raise it? Or lower it?
Maybe to a 13. I don't feel the need for a major change.
Okay. What, if anything, would you do to raise it from an 11 to a 13?
Make more lists and charts at work. Don't allow my desk to get messy because he says I waste a lot of time cleaning my desk.
Fair enough. And I got to say, yeah, I'm a 20 on the time consciousness, for better and worse. I know, you know, I remember reading in 1985 a book called Type A Behavior in Your Heart. And it talked about people who were time conscious, what they called hurry sickness, die much faster. They're much more likely to get heart attacks. Thank God I'm very healthy ostensibly, but there's nobody more time conscious. Number 3, prioritization. A 20-point answer would be you have a clear sense of what's important to your career and to you personally and prioritize your time accordingly. And a 0-point answer is you're unclear of your priorities, so you usually just do what's in front of you at the time. What would you score yourself?
About an 18.
Okay, great. And I would give myself a lower grade, a 12, because I'm just always so fascinated with some cool, new, interesting problem to solve that sometimes I will just do what's ever in front of me, and I don't prioritize. Let's play for a moment. What's most important to me in terms of prioritization is Any way that I know I can, I'm just one of 7 billion people, but anything I can do, the more I could change the world for the better, in my own definition, the better. That's my number one thing. What's your number one?
Become a Rotarian.
Yeah, well, I love Rotary. I think Rotary, we were just at the Calistoga Rotary event, and I'm blown away that their single-minded mission for the last 50 years has been to eradicate polio. And they have done so in every one except three of the countries where there ever had been polio, what they call endemic countries. And there was only 150 new cases this last year in any country, in any endemic of like almost 200 countries in the world. How amazing Rotary's efforts have been to immunize kids against polio. What a fantastic organization it is. And I can't stand that the typical intelligentsia tends to ridicule Rotary and Lions, and you know, they almost think they all wear fezes, which of course they don't do. They are the
most... Those are the Shriners.
Right, I know. They are the most self-effacing, good people who do it. I'm just amazed at how good those folks are. But anyway, I digress.
Bird walk.
What'd you say?
Bird walk.
What's that mean?
That was a bird walk. We got totally off topic.
Oh, I never heard that phrase before.
Really?
Bird walk. No, never heard it. Anyway. Okay, now question number four. Time effectiveness at work. A 10-point answer, and I've scored these points. This was, I consider, a 10-point. This item is worth 10 points. You're always asking yourself, not is this the fastest way to do a task or the best way to do a task, but is it the most time-effective approach, the approach that yields the most benefit for the time expended? For example, if you're writing a report, you're asking yourself, how much research should I do? Not the most, how much, you know, not too much, not too little, just right, like Goldilocks. That's a 10-point answer. You're always thinking, what's the sweet spot, the time effectiveness? Zero is you rarely think about whether your approach to tasks is time effective. You just do them. Where would you score yourself on time effectiveness?
Zero.
Ooh.
Maybe I'm doing it unconsciously, but I can't remember ever sitting there having the conscious thought, is this the most time-effective way to do this task?
No, you don't have to be...
You wanted honesty, yeah. You got it.
Yeah, you don't have to be conscious about it. But let's look at a project you've done. Let's say there was a talk you had to give or something you had to write. Looking back on it, were you overly perfection? Did you spend more time on it?
No, that's not me. I'm not overly perfection.
Or how about do you do it too slipshod, so that in fact, if you had spent some more time, it would have been well worth it for the amount of time put in?
If we're doing it that way, I'd give myself an 8.
Right. I thought so, too. And that, you know, I'm glad you asked. It's not a matter of conscience. It's whether the results of your work... You've put in the amount of time that led to pretty much
the right result, maybe not a perfect result.
For the time, right, for the time expended, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay,
okay, great. And I would score myself on that a 10, I must admit, but low on the other one, that prioritization. I don't want to give myself 10s on, maximum on everything. On prioritization, I'd give myself an 8 out of 20. So let's go to number 5. Another 10-point question. It's time effectiveness outside of work. A 10-point answer is you consciously assess the wisdom of spending time on such time consumers as golf, cooking, complicated meals, watching TV, playing video games, distant camping trips, or your cousin's third wedding in Oshkosh. A 0-point answer would be you rarely think about the time effectiveness of your out-of-work activities. What would you score yourself?
I probably rarely think about the time effectiveness of those, but having said that, I don't spend a lot of time. I certainly don't play golf. God knows I don't cook complicated or uncomplicated meals.
You cook the most delicious meals. That's a real strength. Unbelievable.
Well, thank you, but yeah. Not very often. I don't play a lot of video games. I certainly don't go camping on camping trips. So a lot of the things that perhaps people spend a lot of time on, I don't do just because they're not my preferences. Having said that, I will repeat, Downton Abbey tonight, mm-hmm. I'm not going to consciously assess the wisdom of it. I'm just going to do it and enjoy it.
Well, I think that can be, again, it's not a matter whether you consciously decide to be time effective, but you work about 60 hours a week. So, you know, that beyond that is, it would seem, you know, it's clear by definition that you're not spending too much time on these other activities. So.
Yeah, but we also agreed that if I worked more time effectively and manage my time a little better. Instead of 60, I could cut it down to 50.
Well, anyway, sixth question on the how well do you manage your time self-inventory. This is called this is number six is delegation. I've called this a 15-point question. 15-point maximum point answer is you delegate tasks when your time would otherwise be better spent. For example, you may have recruited an intern to work for you, even though he or she may not do all the tasks as well as you could. You may have hired a part-time personal assistant to, for example, do errands or laundry or housekeeping. That's a 15-point answer. A 0-point answer would be you rarely delegate, even when it makes sense to. What would you score yourself?
7.5.
Okay. Do you want to change that?
Yeah, there are probably some things that I should delegate. I delegate more of the outside of work things than the work things, and I think there are probably some things I could delegate, so I'd like to make it a 9.
Is there a specific you want to delegate, or at this point you need to think about it?
Oh, yes, I've thought about it. I'm thinking of delegating the lead in Napa County Reads, mm-hmm. which takes up a lot of my time.
Great. And I knew I also
probably
have to delegate.
Done better by someone else.
I hate marketing. People think because I host a radio show and I like to write that I do it for. I hate marketing. I really hate it. It's just not who I am. I'd 10 times as much rather create content than market it. I need to hire somebody who's a computer geek to who's going to help search engine optimize my website, tweet, my Twitter, my Facebook blog, because none of that has been done, and it's silly because I put all that work in, and if I can get more people to read my stuff. That's great, but I just have no motivation. And I could learn to do that stuff, but I just hate it. I always procrastinate it, so I should delegate that. Number seven question, flexibility of approach to tasks. A 10 is a 10.1. 10-point answer would be, as when driving a car, you consciously decide the appropriate speed for doing a task. For example, on an important, difficult task, you consciously slow down and work carefully. A 0-point answer would be you never think about how quickly and carefully a task needs to be done. You just do it. How would you score yourself there?
Well, it's that conscious thing that I have I have to give myself a 0. I'm sure I slow down and work carefully on important, difficult tasks, but I don't consciously think, slow down and work hard on this important, difficult task.
I think the conscious thing is overrated. I'm sorry. I think that's a mistake in my quiz here, I think. And it's also too redundant with the previous ones. It's maybe that we could just scrap that item.
Okay.
Number eight.
Good. I hate having a 0 score.
Yeah. Number eight. You know when to stop struggling. A 10-point answer would be consciously and with reasonable accuracy. Of course, not the word consciously. With reasonable accuracy, you decide when additional struggle is too unlikely to be time effective, so you get help when needed, or you decide you can complete the task without conquering the roadblock. And a 0-point answer is, even if you feel additional struggle is quite unlikely to help, you continue to struggle with it on your own, or you give up when you should be asking for help. 10?
Yep, 10. Good. I would ask for help.
Great. Let's move on. So, for example, dear listeners, you know, are there... are you aware that everybody has essentially a team of advisors? Is there a tutor, an expert friend? Have you simply done a keyword search on the internet to find a better explanation for your problem? Could a librarian point you to resources? What about getting answers from your professional association, going to a forum online on LinkedIn or on your professional association's website? So that's a way, instead of struggling by yourself, which is going to make you want to procrastinate more, you can perhaps realize you do have lots of sources of getting advice. Number nine. Making the most of dead time. A 10-point answer is you usually have an activity handy to sponge up dead time. I call them sponge activities. While you're on a commute train, whether you're in line, whether you're walking, waiting in the doctor's office, whatever. So you might bring a problem to think about, a professional article to read. That's a 10-point answer. A 0-point answer is you always veg out during dead time. How would you score yourself?
I think email today eats up all. There is no dead time. The minute we have any 2-minute period of time when we're not doing something, we whip out the cell phone and start checking our email and responding to it.
And, of course, because our email is on our smartphones, we can be doing that anywhere, anytime.
Yep.
And that's a good example of a sponge activity. Okay, and the final question, number 10. I call this one growth. The 10-point answer would be you're trying to better manage your time. For example, you are asking time-efficient people for suggestions. You might keep a log for a few days on how you actually spend your time. Or you take to heart this self-assessment's results that we've been working on. 0 is you're not trying to improve your time management. How would you rate yourself?
10. I've already re-looked at my to-do list and looked at starred the things that are the A things. Although, again, I have to just say one thing about Brian Tracy. He says you have to label your tasks A, B, C, D, and E. And for C, he lists activities such as having a cup of coffee or chatting with a coworker at work. Who on earth would put that on their to-do list?
I know, ridiculous. Okay, so, well, but, you know, sometimes if we tend not to do it and we realize we should have more coffees with people, it might not be a bad idea to put it on the list. Who knows?
Not so much.
Anyway, the scoring would be is utterly unvalidated. But in case you were, dear listeners, you were trying to keep score, I'll just make it like this: if your score is over, the maximum score is 135. If your score is over 100, that's pretty darn good. If your score is between 70 and 100, not so great. Below 70, you probably are leaving too much of life on the table. Now let's go to the phones. If you, dear listeners, either want to make a comment about the various time management ideas and foundational principles that we've discussed, or you have a problem with time management because you're just not motivated to, or you don't know how to manage this particular task, well, anything related to time management, we invite you to call now. Barbara and I will do our best to try to help. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I guess we can call that a 3-minute workover focusing specifically on time management. Before we go, the phones are ringing, but before we go to the phones, we assembled a list of specific time management tactics. Oh my God, all the lines are lighted up in 1 second. So no, we're not going to do anything. We're going to just...
let's go to the phone.
Well, no, she's trying to frantically deal with all the calls, so I need to give her a minute before she can put the calls on the line. Oh, I guess she did already. Good for you. Okay, let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind?
Is that?
It's yes. You, yes.
Okay, let me turn down my radio.
Thank you very much.
I do have some issues with planning, but I also was listening to this and thinking this is the most joyless, uptight, frightened approach to life that I could possibly imagine, because when I leave room for chance and for things that are not completely structured, amazing things come into my life. And it just really strikes me that you cannot plan everything, because things come at you too. It's impossible to do that. And so I was just I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm just like, it's so foreign to me that I'm just kind of stunned that somebody would want to parse out every single thing they do, including coffee with a friend. You know, it just,
That wasn't what we said at all. We made fun of that. I'm sorry. Let's go back. Let's go to the next, Barbara, thank you for the call. Before we go to the next line, do you have any comment about that, Barb?
Well, I think I was kind of agreeing with that. That's why I didn't like his book, because he said that I have to do all those things. I wasn't going to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
So I think there are just some ideas that you can use if you need to improve your time management. If things are going well, you're getting promoted, life is good, then, you know, keep doing what you're doing.
You know, planned serendipity, there's nothing wrong with planned serendipity. No one says you have to schedule every minute, and maybe that's the benefit of that caller. Perhaps we didn't make that clear enough, so I'm glad she called with that. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind?
Are you talking to me?
I am.
All right. I think I have some serious problem with misplaced priorities. When I'm trying to get somewhere, whether it's to something I'm dying to go for fun, or to accomplish something, I end up distracted by little things. I think it's a bit OCD. It's trying to fit in that 30-second task that becomes a minute to 2-minute task, and too many of them, and you're late, or you even miss things. And I decided New Year's resolution was I am going to conquer the clock. I've been terrible at it, and my year is about overcoming this and possibly cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm looking for a solution for people who are the worst procrastinators you've ever known, can imagine, and miss important appointments and 3-hour shows that they have tickets to.
Awesome. Okay, well, first of all, I am grateful that you called, and your honesty is fabulous. So I'm going to just suggest something. It may not be right, but we'll keep going until we find something that feels useful. I want you getting off this phone feeling like you've got at least something that you're going to do a little differently.
I would love that.
Great. There are these little timers. My favorite are these little Pomodoro little days. They're shaped like a tomato, but they don't have to be. They're very small. And you can set them for 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes. Would it help you to keep top of mind your new resolution, that you set it for 30 seconds or a minute, 2 minutes, whatever you want, and that every time that thing goes off, you ask yourself, am I feeling good about how I've allocated, how I'm spending my time? Would that help you stay more vigilant to your new habit?
I am using timers. I'm not asking myself, do I feel good about it? Because when it goes off, I get into that panic mode that the fire under my butt really helps me go, but it's bad for my messed up back. So anyway, that 3-minute timer goes, and 30 seconds is a joke almost. And then I go, oh my God, what am I doing?
Okay.
And snap in, and then I'm distracted again 3 minutes later.
Okay. So is the answer paradoxically to slow down? It's no, you know, as I said, rushing does nobody any good. So when the timer goes off at the 3-minute mark or whatever, and you're saying, oh, I'm not real happy about what I'm doing, is it time paradoxically to take 3 deep breaths and then say, okay, how can I slowly and steadily, now what should I do, so that way you don't get panicked and you don't get freaked out? Do you think that would help? So the motto is 3-minute timer, and then if you're unhappy, 3 deep breaths and say, okay, now what do I want to do slowly and steadily? Do you think that would help, or to be honest, that would not help?
I think that would help a lot. Also, telling myself, trying to say to myself, you being there is all that counts. Your zit showing or your wet towel on the floor from the shower, it doesn't matter. None of it matters. Your word matters. And that erases those 3 deep breaths, but I start saying, okay, get out the door, get out the door.
And slowly, not rushing, but slowly. And that way you can savor life. You know, right now, I'm listening to you, and I am filled with gratitude that I am having the opportunity to interact with you, and I'm not rushing. All I'm doing is being present in the moment. I like that Buddhist concept of being in the moment. And so I savor life more, and I am more present, and I'm staying on task. So is it a matter of slowing down and savoring each life's moment and being present?
I think that's what comes most naturally to me. I think I'm a vortex of good conversation and often distractions. I mean, so slowing down is is my natural state. And it seems like I need the pressure. Just turned 39 and don't have a career together.
Mm-hmm.
Back needs to be focused on as the core problem, and so I feel like time is running out for me.
Yeah. Barbara, I'd like you to make a comment. I'm not going to let you off the phone. You're a wonderful call. You're exactly who I'm grateful for having as a caller. And I want to work specifically on the career thing with you, but I want Barbara to get a chance to make a comment or a question before I do that. Barb?
Well, my favorite author, Julie Morgenstern, in her book Time Management from the Inside Out, has a couple of pages very specifically dealing with overcoming chronic lateness.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a bunch of ideas, including the old one about setting your clocks ahead by 10 minutes, but acting as though they had the right time, and analyzing whether you're always the same number of minutes late. Is it that you always arrive 15 minutes late, or sometimes do you arrive an hour and a half late, and sometimes you arrive 5 minutes late, and there are different ways of dealing with each of those things.
Okay. Now, what's your first name, by the way? Or you can make up a name, but I just want to call you something. What's your name?
Jim.
Jim. Okay, Jim.
No, Jim.
Dim. Okay, Dim.
No, J-E-M.
Jim. Okay, J-E-M. Jim. Okay, Jim. So now, with your permission, my philosophy right now, my approach is going to be to help you find a career goal that's exciting enough that you will want to be more disciplined about being time effective. Does that sound like a good idea?
I think I've got one.
Great.
Firmly in my heart and mind.
Tell me, I love it. Tell me about it.
It's facilitating a discussion show around relationships and sexuality.
I remember you, right.
Yeah, yeah. From kinks to keeping the spark alive in a long term, all across the board, facilitating the discussion, often guest speakers, and like 5 to 10 people and putting it out on podcasts on Love Life Radio.
Okay. And so let's start with some basics. Do you know whether you get there or not is irrelevant, because getting you in motion and keeping you in motion is critical, and it may be how you're going to be, you can make your living, but I, as somebody who spent my life in radio, 25 years now, and I don't get paid, you know, it's very hard, especially in an era where there's so many other vehicles for people getting their information and entertainment. So I mm-hmm. would be a little remiss if I said
very clearly you saying that.
Right. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, because if that's where your drive is, you know, I do this radio show, has nothing to do with money. It is my spiritual calling. It is what I feel I was meant to do. So I do not want you to give it up. I want you to be doing it, and that will get you in gear for other things. The being involved in creating that radio show will give you more juice about who you are and something. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. It
okay.
does, and it does make me want to get more disciplined. And as
right.
I said, I just hit 39, and I was doing these discussions steadily every month or twice a month, recording them. For 5 years. And
yeah. Okay. I'm going to, you know, because all our lines are lighted up and the time is almost up. What I'm going to simply ask you to do is please get off the phone now and make a very clear baby step to-do list. Picture the benefits of how good it would feel for you to have that show. Picture the liabilities of how you would feel if you didn't do it and you procrastinated. And then use that as your template, as your reminder. I want to thank you for the call. I want to try to get, if I can, maybe one more call before the show's over. Thanks for the call. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air.
Marty.
Hi.
I'm trying to call from San Francisco.
Okay.
I understand that the critique of Brian Fish's book didn't go over that well with your wife. He had an audio cassette on time management that was just excellent. And he patterned that audio cassette off of, I think the guy's name was Alan Lankin.
Yes, that's a very famous, that was one of the earliest books on time management, Alan Lankin's book, yes.
And
L-A-K-E-I-N.
Maybe just the book kind of rubbed it the wrong way, but Brian Tracy has excellent stuff on not only time management, but just a plethora of different subjects of business, for sure. Personal self-improvement.
That's true.
Development. Sales, you name it. He has
true.
A tremendous overview of the business world. I just didn't want your audience just to walk away from this conversation thinking that Brian Tracy isn't someone that is very, very helpful. I think you and he are two of my great heroes.
Well, thank you very much for that, and as well as, you're right, I wouldn't have asked Barbara to read the Brian Tracy book unless he wasn't a real star. Barbara, we are out of time. We have only a few seconds, but I'd like to give you the last word. Is there something in 15 seconds or so that you want to share as a final capstone to our discussion about time management?
It can improve your life, and I agree with your last caller. It is a very important book. I just failed the first test of the 4 D's.
Yeah, you just weren't that, you know, just not that motivated to be any more time conscious.
Right, but if you're really motivated, it's a fine book.
Dear listeners, by the way, we had 20, I came up with a list of 20 time management tactics. If you'd like it, just email me and I will email it to you. My email address is mnemko@comcast.net. That's mnemko@comcast.net. And that is Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr. Good advice with your hand signals. Appreciate it very much, Joanne. And, of course, to all of you for listening and calling in, please join me again next Sunday at 11. No guest. The show is all about you. You or someone you love is stuck, no job, lousy business, worried if your business idea will turn into a lousy business. Call in for a 3-minute workover. I will try to help you. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.